Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the bird's nest of free speech, because bird's nests are up high and you get a good view. What kind of bird are we? I'm not quite sure. We're eagles. I guess we're eagles. I tell you what, we're not. We're not those kind of birds that get cucked by the cuckoos. We're not that. We're not cucks. We are proud eagles. And so take out your slingshot and send some money up to us high in our eagle's nest. And it's badly needed fundage. And RBN has been making an appeal for everybody. We're all chipping in. You got to keep this going. So go to republicbroadcasting.org. Follow the instructions. I tell you what, hold on 1 second. Where is my envelope? Anyway, I'm getting out my old Boomer checkbook, and I'm going to send in, it's somewhere in Round Rock, Texas. I have the address handy. Must be upstairs. Anyway, that's what we do here. But go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage. And while you're at it, download the Koshertified app. We've got a new commercial. It's about to premiere. You'll like it. Okay, today is Monday. It's our day where Cato checks in. Cato, welcome to the show.
Yes, glad to be back here for another week from the American wasteland. We're definitely not ostriches, I can tell you that.
Because ostriches, put their heads in the sand.
They put their heads.
Ostriches are really actually pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they actually stick their heads in the sand. I think that's just an old wives' tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But either way, it's just another day here in the American wasteland, and everything that's going on is more or less what we're talking about.
Speaking of ostriches, do you know what a cassowary is?
A what?
Cassowary.
Cassowary.
It's an ostrich-like bird from New Guinea. It's not as big, but it's still big. It's maybe after the ostrich and the emu and the rhea from South America. I think the cassowary is the fourth largest bird on Earth, and they're similar. They're big birds, and they run around, and they've got like a helmet. They're kind of like bluish purple, and they've got like a helmet on top of their head. I don't know what the heck it is. It's some weird thing on the top of their head. And they grow their middle claw on their foot. It's like extra long, and they will rip your guts out. And I've seen them do it many times. Yeah.
Well, I will say though, you ever had the ostrich steak, ostrich meat? There's a restaurant up in Colorado that apparently serves ostrich meat.
I've never eaten it, but I went by a ranch once, an ostrich ranch, and the males are pretty aggressive. The females are relatively docile, and so I was posing by the fence, and one of the ostriches reached over the top of the fence and plucked at the top of my head.
Ouch. Yeah.
It was okay. Anyway, so we are going to be playing a video. Why don't you give us the introduction to this video?
Okay, so there's this American-born Chinese guy. He's about, he's a young guy in his, mid-20s, close to my age, who is, he does a lot of commentary, a lot of videos about China and, the U.S., and some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. He lives, I think, somewhere in San Francisco. He was born and raised in Chinatown, is according to his biography, but he does some good commentary, talking about the rise of China and, the fall of the American Empire, and talking about how, China's rise and America's fall, and how China's much more stable. And the thing with him is I would describe him as more of the, shall we say, the non-white anti-liberal. He's not exactly pro-white either. In fact, there's a lot of things he doesn't like about white people, including, the British imperialism against China, which we all know who was behind that, wasn't exactly the British people. But he does a lot of commentary talking about just, you know, how bad liberalism is, and he's very against liberalism, is what he is, and he views liberalism as a, essentially liberalism as a Western disease. You know, liberalism is pretty much a white man's disease, because it, you only find it in the West, you don't find it in other, you know, non-white countries. You only find liberalism in white countries, and he does a commentary talking about how basically liberalism is totally incompatible with China, and essentially the only way that China will accept liberalism is if it's militarily enforced upon them, just like it was under the days of British occupation. So basically the video, he talks about the essentially, you know, Chinese liberals, he calls them traitors, and they absolutely are traitors. But in the video, he'll talk about, you know, the history behind all of it.
Okay, well, without further ado, let's get going on it.
Modern liberalism is an ideology which should be completely rejected by Chinese people. Chinese people who identify themselves as liberals are traitors to China. There's no other words to describe them. There's no way to mince words. They are turncoats, and they are traitors that turn their back on China and have turned their back on their ancestral home and heritage. Generally speaking, Chinese liberals hate China. They rejoice in the failures of China. They celebrate the failures of China. They want China to break apart. They celebrate the civil unrest which occurs in China, whether if it was the civil unrest which occurred in Hong Kong back in 2019, or the political unrest which occurred in Beijing back in 1989. The problem with Chinese liberalism is that it is completely based on deception. Chinese liberals claim that they are fighting for beautiful concepts like human rights, democracy, and freedom in China, but ultimately, the end result of their ideology is going to result in the destruction of China as a unified state. It's going to result in the destruction of communities and the collective that makes up China, whether they are conscious and aware of this or not. Now, what is liberalism? What is this ideology of modern-day liberalism? Well, generally speaking, the word liberal is often given to individuals who show unnecessary and excessive tolerance for other people's behavior, even if it violates the generally accepted norms and values of the society. You see, liberals from all around the world, of all nationalities, who subscribe to the modern liberal ideology, have this belief in the maximum liberty of the individual, that every single individual is a special person, and every single individual should be free to express themselves however they like without regard to the society or the collective, even if it harms the society or the collective. Excessive liberalism in the upbringing of youngsters negatively affects the development of the personality of youngsters. And as a result, this often leads to antisocial behavior, high crime, and violation of social and ethical norms. Other products of liberalism also include the loss of family values, lack of social stability, and loss of cultural roots. So for example, if you look at the United States of America, or Western Europe, which are the headquarters of the modern ideology of liberalism. Look at cities like San Francisco, New York, Oakland, Chicago, London, Paris. Crime everywhere. Excessive tolerance results in the complete destruction of the social fabric of the country and society. Liberalism forces the society to accept certain norms and values even if the majority do not want these norms of values. The society is forced to tolerate things like a criminal subculture, the mass use of drugs, bourgeois decadence, and excessive materialism, and so on. Now, why is this liberal ideology being promoted so much by the governments and the media of the West, by the politicians of the West? Why? Because it is a tool. Liberalism can be used as a tool to regime change other countries. The Western media always portrays countries that adopt liberal values as civilized. You know, countries like Britain, United States of America, Canada, they're the civilized world. Countries that do not accept liberal values, like China, Russia, Iran, and so on, are uncivilized countries. And uncivilized countries don't have a voice in the Western media. And the Western media can manufacture consent, and they can manufacture public opinion and convince the public opinion to go to war against Russia, to sanction Russia, sanction China, sanction Iran, sanction Venezuela, sanction Cuba, sanction any single country that does not subscribe to this liberal world order. So this is, at the end of the day, for money. For money, the Western elites have business interests in the developing world, and they want to use liberalism as a tool to defame the developing world as uncivilized so they can go into these developing countries and take over the land, labor, and resources. That is what it's all about, people. It's all about money, domination, and control. So that's why I say, go China. Go Russia. Russia and China are the last barrier. It's the last barrier for humanity. Otherwise, there's going to be no more family values. There's going to be no more ancestors. No more tradition. There's going to be no more social stability. There's going to be no more culture. Everything's just going to be this globalized neoliberal order of fast food, consumerism, boba. The Chinese liberals almost won in the 1980s. In the 1980s, China entered into a period called reform and opening up. The leader of China at the time, Deng Xiaoping, believed that China needed a market economy. A market economy will help China open up its productive forces, its land, labor, and capital, so that China can modernize and successfully become a powerful and very rich country. Deng Xiaoping was correct. Reform and opening up was the correct thing to do. But Deng Xiaoping was also a genius. Deng Xiaoping knew that if China opened up to the outside world and introduced a market economy, China inevitably will come under the influence of Western political, cultural, and social influences. So in the 1980s, Deng Xiaoping put forward something called the Four Cardinal Principles. The Four Cardinal Principles state that no matter what happens to China under the market reforms, there are four principles which can never go against, which can never be opposed. These four principles were the principle of upholding socialism, meaning that China must always be a socialist country. The principle of upholding the people's democratic dictatorship. That means that the state must always control the capital. The capital, the wealth, cannot control the state. The principle of upholding the leadership of the Communist Party. That means the Communist Party must always be the ruling party. And the principle of upholding Marxist-Leninism. Okay? So after four cardinal principles were passed, Deng Xiaoping appointed two known Chinese liberals to be his left hand and to be his right hand. One was Hu Yaobang, the other was Zhao Ziyang. Hu Yaobang and Zhao Ziyang were like the Gorbachev and Yeltsin of China. They were liberals. They did not care about the socialist system. They were liberals. They wanted to emulate America and emulate the West as much as possible. And they formed the liberal faction within the Communist Party of China, and they were at the highest leadership level in the Communist Party. They were Deng Xiaoping's left and right hand. In 1989, Hu Yaobang died. Hu Yaobang died, and a funeral was held for him in Beijing. It was during this time that a group of Chinese college students who were from the liberal camp decided to set off a premeditated political unrest in the city of Beijing. These students manipulated public opinion with misinformation. These students had support from the United States of America. These students eventually gathered this huge mass movement and they occupied Beijing for many weeks. At a critical moment, Zhao Ziyang decided to abandon the four cardinal principles. And he decided to go travel to the students and meet with the students and join the students. It was at this point that Deng Xiaoping realized his mistake and decided to fire Zhao Ziyang. Zhao Ziyang was fired, and the People's Liberation Army was sent in to do what they had to do. Deng Xiaoping saved China with this decision. The decision to send in the People's Liberation Army to crush this movement was the correct decision. Because if the students were not crushed, China would have become a liberal whole dominated by the multinational corporations of America and the Western world. Do you want to know what a liberal whole dominated by multinational companies from the West looked like? Go to Russia in 1998. Go to Russia in 1998. You want to live in Russia in 1998? Or even right now, why do you think Africa, the Middle East, Latin America, and the developing world is so poor? Because in many of these countries, multinational corporations from America, from the West, have taken over the land, labor, and resources of these places. And the local people cannot build wealth. That is why. Why did Che Guevara become so anti-American in the 1950s? Because he took a motorcycle trip in South America. He saw how the fruit companies from America were exploiting the local indigenous people, and he became very upset. Everything's connected, you guys. Everything is connected. Think about this way. We're going to oversimplify everything for you. The United States of America is dominated by a very wealthy elite class that control the multinational corporations. These corporations control the finance, the banking, the food companies, the medicine companies, the gas companies, the oil companies, and they make the wealth by taking advantage of the land, labor, and resources of the developing world. To build consent to attack the developing world, they use liberalism as a tool. They would say that Iraq has no human rights. We should bring human rights to Iraq, and they'll use that as an excuse to convince the American people to go to war against Iraq so they can take all the oil there, right? It's the same thing that they're doing to China. It's the same thing they did to Cuba. It's the same thing they did to Russia. It's the same thing they do all around the world. Come on, people. It's not that hard to understand once you really start reading. It's really not that hard to understand. Anyways, that's all I got for you today.
All right. So why don't you assess what he said and we'll discuss it?
Well, yeah, he made a lot of good points, talking about, you know, how these, you know, international corporations, these American, you know, multinational corporations do take advantage of poor, you know, third world countries, and how they, you know, take all their resources. But really, it's even worse than that. Because not only do they take advantage of the resources and keep them poor, they want to impose the, you know, liberal ideology on all these underdeveloped countries, you know, including, you know, all the degenerate, you know, gay crap and all that, and force them to accept it. The thing is, the way he defined liberalism, I'm going to define liberalism this way. This is my definition of liberalism, modern liberalism. Modern liberalism is the aggressive, militant enforcement of the tolerance of and acceptance of bad behavior, bad criminal, degenerate, antisocial behavior upon a society. I'll say that again. Liberalism, modern liberalism, is the aggressive and militant enforcement of the acceptance and tolerance of bad, criminal, antisocial, degenerate, and destructive behavior upon a society.
Okay. Well, we're at the break now, so we're gonna get into the discussion on the other side of the break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We are back. One more time with that. Your definition of liberalism.
Modern day liberalism. Liberalism is the radical, militant enforcement of the tolerance and acceptance of bad, criminal, antisocial, degenerate, and destructive behavior on a society.
Okay. So it's the enforcement of some sort of universal value system that people don't like.
Exactly. That no society should tolerate, no matter which society that is.
Some sort of anti-social value system. Now, people listening to this gentleman, what was his name from San Francisco?
His channel is called Captain Cool 07.
Captain Cool 07. You know, some of what he said would rub people the wrong way, because he was talking approvingly of these four principles Deng Xiaoping stipulated at the beginning of the reforms. They're going to reform, but we're going to stick to these four principles. The last one, as I recall, was, well, two of them. One was the permanent rule of the Chinese Communist Party, and the other was Marxism-Leninism. Now, what Marxism-Leninism means is context-dependent. It means different things to different people. It usually Marxism-Leninism at least partly includes how the party is structured with, you know, its so-called democratic centralism. It's very centralized. There are processes within the party for input, but once a central decision's made, the unanimity is expected. So you could call it top down, but there is a process, kind of a bottom up process, that's part of the top down, which wasn't always followed, especially, you know, in the Soviet Union or under Mao, it wasn't necessarily followed. But, you know, there's structures, there's a Politburo, there's a Central Committee, there's People's Congress, these types of structures. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect, traditionally, was a centrally planned economy and state ownership of the means of production, which China's moved beyond. It really doesn't have a centrally planned economy. I mean, there may be a certain amount of central planning, but there's a certain amount of central planning in France or Britain or other places too, United States to an extent. So it's economically, it is strayed from what Marxist-Leninism would have meant to people in the 1980s when he made this proclamation. With regards to the, and I, you know, when to most RBN listeners' ears, Marxism, Leninism, Communist Party, don't engender warm feelings of bunnies and duckies and things like that. These are grating terms to most RBN listeners' ears. Now, the one thing about the Communist Party, the continued rule of the Communist Party, the monopoly of power by the Communist Party, when you think about it, politics is going on within the Communist Party. Politics goes on within the Communist Party, whereas in the United States, politics goes on, you know, officially through elections, but, you know, it's through the media and everything like that. One has to ask, when you look around at the way elections have been manipulated, and like the very, very bad changes that we've seen in our society, we've had these elections. You can't necessarily call them free elections because they're not, but we have elections, we have competitive elections, and we've gotten really, really bad results from it. And China has had its politics take place mostly within the Communist Party. It's undergone enormous changes. So it's not as if it's rigid. It's undergone enormous changes. The politics is going on. And one might ask, is politics within the party, is it more favorable to meritocracy and to, policies that actually benefit people? Does it do a better job of that than our system? Do we have a meritocracy, or is, Joseph R. Brandon and Chlamydia Harris, are these the best that we have to offer? So it's kind of a rhetorical question. I took up the whole middle segment pretty much, but Cato, you're going to have plenty of time to respond when we come back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness, but there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually, it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Okay, so we are back, and so I had a lot to say about Marxism, communism, and then finally I asked the question, does politics within the Communist Party, does it yield better results in terms of meritocracy and beneficial policies than politics within the electoral system that you see in Western so-called democracies?
Yeah, so let me first comment about the definitions. When China says Marxism-Leninism, that's not the same meaning as, excuse me, as, you know, the way we would, you know, we in the West, or we as dissidents in the West, rather, would understand Marxism-Leninism. You know, this is where, you know, the meaning of definitions, the meaning of words matters. They have two totally different definitions. I mean, here in the West, especially amongst us dissident circles, we understand Marxism-Leninism to be the original, you know, Jewish communism, Jewish Bolshevism, the Jewish takeover of Russia, you know, Leninism, you know, Leninist Russia was basically the worst time in all of human history. So that's how we would understand it here in the West, but over there in China, well, Leninism, that is, you know, over there, because the Communist Party of China was the founder of the Modern People's Republic of China, the New China. And when they say Marxism-Leninism, that's more of a historical continuity, to where basically just uphold the principles of you know, the Communist Party of China, obviously not the radical Maoist, you know, destructive principles, but it is just to show that the Communist Party of China is the one still in control of China. That's all it is. It's just more of a establishment of legitimacy, the term, as opposed to an actual, you know, destructive ideology, or, you know, has nothing to do with Jewish Bolshevism. You know, and you know, I say the definition of terms matters, and absolutely, even, you know, let's take the term, you know, Nazism, fascism, for example. You know, when the Russians talk about, oh, we need to denazify, we need to go after the Nazis, they're not talking about the same, you know, Nazis as you know, the liberal West would say. It's two totally different things. Here in the liberal West, the definition of Nazi is anyone who upholds traditional European values, and anyone, furthermore, anyone who questions the official World War II narrative of the Holocaust and, you know, World War II itself, oh, they're Nazis here in the liberal West. Whereas in Russia, the way Nazi and fascist is defined is basically an aggressive foreign military threat to Russia, the nation of Russia, and the Russian people and the Russian Federation. That's how it's defined in Russia. So, you know, all you see all these, you know, global homo, these liberal gay anal pride parades, and, you know, in the West, in the Ukraine, Russia will call that fascist, kind of like that. So the definition of terms really matters. And then also, I guess regarding the second question, question about the Chinese Communist Party and policy of, you know, which serves the people better. Well, there's the famous patriotic Chinese businessman, Eric Li, who said in one of his interviews, he said that the difference between China and the U.S. is, in China, you cannot change the party, but you can change the policy. Whereas in the U.S., yeah, you can change the party, but you cannot change the policy.
Okay, that's a good, insightful thing. Can you repeat it one time?
Mm-hmm. So in China, you cannot change the party. Well, you can change the policy. And China's, of all the nations, China has had the most policy updates of all nations. Whereas in the United States, you can change the party all you want, but you cannot change the policy. The policy remains the same no matter which party's in charge.
That's a really good way of putting it. And so, I mean, you have had such a massive turnaround in China since the 1980s, or maybe, you know, late 70s, since the death of Mao. It has just changed more than any country. It's just amazing how much it's changed, and changed for the better. I mean, there was really nowhere to go but up compared to the Maoist days, pretty much, and it's gone way up. In the United States, we've gone from one administration to another, one party to another, and things just keep getting worse. So I think that's something to think about. I like the way that was put, and I think people should remember. In China, you can change the policy, and they've massively changed their policies, but you can't change the party. The politics is taking place within the party. And in America, you can change the parties, but the policies just wind up being the same.
Yeah, the same self-destructive, you know, spiraling down policies, and it's only getting exponentially worse in the United States, whereas China has gotten exponentially better ever since really the 90s all the way to today. I mean, you just saw the exponential growth of China. Even compared to 10 years ago, you can see the huge amount of exponential growth, whereas in the United States, it's just getting worse and worse exponentially. You know, now the ugly establishment has reared its totalitarian, you know, malicious intents to where they're now starting to go after and seize people's assets. And they've been doing that for a long time, you know, through the IRS and various sorts.
So you don't have to like China. A lot of people out here don't, who are out in radio land, don't like China. Part of it is because they've probably been propagandized against it. But nevertheless, even if you can think whatever you want about China, but it's just undeniable that life has gotten much, much better for the Chinese people over the past four decades, and it is getting worse and worse for the American people. And how do you explain that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, I mean, you just look at the, it's self-evident. You look at what China has achieved in the past 20, 30 years, and then you look at the U.S. in the past 20, 30 years, and you know, there are all kinds of videos out there, too, comparing China and the U.S. And, for example, you go to the major cities in China, you know, very tall, futuristic, towering skyscrapers, you know, the best top-notch, you know, public transit system in the world. Their metro, you know, the subway system and how clean it is and how safe it is. Whereas you go to, like, you know, just New York City, for example, and look how much of a dump it is and how much of a hellhole it is.
And then people, you know, people will often say, oh, you know, we sent all our jobs over there. We sent all our factories over there. Like, okay, did Americans take the World Trade Center? I guess that's gone. The Empire State Building and put it on a boat and stick it over in Shanghai. You know, it's really a myth that we gave them everything. It's such a myth. This was done it was hard work, but, you know, people all over the world will work hard. There's a lot of hard work going on all over the world. It was hard work, but it was also smart work. It was coordinated. And you could say, well, they couldn't have done it without our markets. Yeah, okay, so they were building things and selling it to us. It was eventually quality goods at reasonable prices. Originally, it was probably crappy goods at super cheap prices, but nowadays it's quality goods at reasonable prices. And, you know, they worked hard. They did it. And it wasn't even – this wasn't started by the United States. This is another – massive misconception that this was something started by Jews in America or whoever in America. It wasn't. This was a Chinese thing. It was started partly by Deng Xiaoping opening up, and then partly by first the Taiwanese and then other and people, you know, people who lived in Hong Kong under British rule and other ethnic Chinese in Southeast Asia. Investing in China. The investment did not start with America. America was a relative latecomer to it. It started with ethnic Chinese, first and foremost in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ethnic Chinese reaching out to their fellow ethnic Chinese.
Yeah, saying that this would be a good place to do business.
Yeah, which, you know, again proves Taiwan is Chinese. It wasn't until the 1990s when America started to, you know, look to China and get involved, but just the sheer American arrogance. You know, Americans, that's the thing with Americans, is they have this arrogant complex to where they think, like, oh, yeah, the success of other nations is due to, you know, because of America, because of the American empire and American superiority, which is a total myth. It's because a lot of Americans can't stand the fact that other nations can rise without them. They think
And Americans were relative latecomers, so it started off with ethnic Chinese, especially in Taiwan, investing, and then the South Koreans and the Japanese, and then, you know, by the time the Americans were getting involved, so was everybody else. You know, Europeans were investing. So, and China decided, okay, we're going to be the workshop of the world, and the rest and the world took advantage of it, and it's worked out very well for China. And I think in a lot of ways, I mean, in some ways you could say, well, it's worked out badly for us because look at how many jobs we lost. But really the job loss in America had started much earlier and had nothing to do with China. China was completely isolated in the 1960s. It was not even a speck in the world economy, in world trade. And that's when America started losing its jobs. It was losing its jobs to Japan. It was losing its jobs to Germany. You know, the steel industry was lost due to Japanese competition in the 1960s. In the 1970s, the auto industry was lost to competition from both Japanese and Germans. You know, Volkswagen did very well, but it was the Japanese in particular. And then in the 1980s, it was, you know, it was like the electronics industries and all. It first went to the Japanese, then to the to Korea and Taiwan. China was very much a latecomer to all of this, to, you know, the trading with the United States. It was very much a latecomer. And all of these trends of hollowing out of cities, Detroit, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, and all these Rust Belt cities, they were gone long before China opened up. And so this is a massive historical misunderstanding people have, that China's rise came at the expense of America's hollowing out and America's decline. No, America was already, industrially, it was already in decline. By the time all this started, America was already a consumer, just a consumer economy, wasn't producing anything. Go back to 1992, before there was any particular American trade with China, where it was just in its infancy, and listen to a Ross Perot stump speech. And of course, the great sucking sound wasn't coming from China, it was coming from Mexico.
Yeah, it was NAFTA. At that
point, because China wasn't even a factor yet.
Yeah, you know, it was NAFTA. I mean, NAFTA is what really hollowed out a lot of American industry. And that was, yeah, that was in the early 90s, way before, you know, China started to get the bulk of the American, you know, manufacturing investment. The reason why they keep picking up China so much is because, well, the thing is, of all the nations to where American manufacturing went to, China was the only one that was able to rise and become a superpower and become strong to rival the American empire, to rival American hegemony. And just Americans can't fathom that.
Yeah.
So that's why they go after China the hardest, because China's the only one that was actually able to use that and make good of themselves and benefit them, you know, become a superpower, and then use their own use their own rise and their own benefits to benefit other nations independent of the United States. So that's why they're trying to go after China, because China actually did something really good with it. And
yeah.
China beat these American neoliberal companies at their own game. China turned the tables on them. And whereas, yeah,
In the 80s, Japan was the subject of an awful lot of ire, because the Japanese economy had grown, and especially when the yen was strong, it was the Japanese economy was on a per capita basis, you know, the per capita GDP had surpassed the United States, and the Japanese population was, you know, 127 million, American population was like 250, 270, so United States had more than twice the population back then. Now it's more like three times the population due to the self-invasion commenced by the Jews, the ongoing self-invasion. But no, it's, you know, the problems of the United States are entirely due to our political class, which is dominated by Jews and very hostile to us. And people have to get over this looking for some sort of foreign scapegoat. It's not the Chinese. It wasn't the Japanese. It's not the Russians. It's not the Germans. I don't know who else. It's, you know, not even the Mexicans. It is our own internal Jewish ruling class, that all of our major problems are because of positions that they're pushing, policies they're pushing. And people just have to wake up to that reality.
Completely from within. It's all internal. It's all from, you know, our federal government. From Washington D.C., from Wall Street, these major greedy international corporations and, you know, financial institutions and Wall Street. This is the greatest enemy of the American people. No other foreign sovereign nation. It's all internal, and that's what people need to wake up to.
And I don't know what people think. What would happen if Russia were to get wiped out, get embarrassed in Ukraine, and Putin is regime changed, and you get a restoration of Jewish oligarchy in Russia? I mean, do you think that's going to help, like, sticking it to Putin? Is that going to help us overcome the mass immigration or the COVID tyranny, or you know, white people being displaced and
it's only going to be even worse. It's only going to be even worse, because right now Russia is, you know, Russia and China and Iran and you know, Belarus, Syria, all these other nations that have not subscribed to, you know, global liberalism, global homo, all these other nations, they are pretty much our only last chance. We, as, you know, nationalist dissidents in the West, they're our only last chance, because the reason why the American empire, the American federal system, the federal government hasn't completely gone after people from within, you know, the dissidents, is because Russia and China are keeping them in check. Russia and China are keeping them distracted from doing what they really want to do to the, you know, the and not just the hardcore dissidents like us, but even, you know, the 70 million people who didn't vote for Biden. Mm. They want to throw them, you know, arrest them and lock them all up, I'm sure. I mean, they've already said that, you know, anyone who essentially questions the official 2020 election results is a domestic terrorist. Yep. So it's because there's other nations out there that are posing a hindrance and an obstacle, evil American empire. Only that's keeping them in check for what they want to do to us within. A defeat of Russia would be very, very bad for the entire world and for people within America.
Okay, we're at the last break. We'll be right back.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
The CDC says gun deaths were up 35% in 2020. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Yes, you heard me correctly. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported on firearms deaths. 2020 had the highest rate since 1994. Gun violence is a crime. It would make a lot more sense if the FBI were reporting on shooting deaths. Or maybe since firearms is in their name, ATF should produce this report. Why is the CDC reporting on anything that is not a disease? This is how gun violence will become the next public health crisis that the CDC will use to seize unconstitutional power to combat. What will the CDC claim is their next domain to conquer? Traffic fatalities? Aviation deaths? Why do we even need the FBI, ATF, DOT, or FAA? Just let the CDC do it all. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, see this Pacum Parabellum.
We're back, and so it doesn't have to be that the Russians or the Chinese that they actually love American people and are fighting for us. It doesn't have to be that. But what it actually is their enemies are our enemies. So they don't necessarily have to be fighting for us, but their success is helpful to us because their success comes at the expense of our hostile ruling elite. It does. How would it, if there's a fight between Vladimir Putin and Victoria Nuland and the Jew crew at the State Department and the Jews who run the media and everything, how would it be in our benefit to have these Jews win and replace Putin? How's that going to benefit us? How could it possibly benefit us? What if they're humiliated, though? What if they're humiliated? What if they're humiliated and more and more people start realizing, oh, wait a minute, these were a bunch of Jews, and they, as people are pointing out, people like Coach Red Pill, for instance, and others are pointing out that this is really a Jewish vendetta against Vladimir Putin. And having the Russians win and disgrace these people and expose them to criticism is that could get us a good deal of the way to where we need to be in terms, because all we need is for people to be able to start actually saying who's responsible for these policies, and things will start changing fast.
Well, there's a very old ancient Greek saying that applies more than ever today, especially in the field of geopolitics, that we as dissidents in the West we need to apply, which is, the enemy of mine enemy is my friend. And our enemy is the U.S. federal system, and their enemy is Russia and China. So therefore, the enemy of mine enemy is my friend, meaning that Russia and China, you know, whether you like them or not internally is besides the point. They are our friends in this global struggle against Jewish imperialism, Jewish liberalism, you know, through usage of the United States.
Hey, I went to China. I did not like it. I had a horrible time. But what you said makes such perfect sense. And, you know, part of the reason I had a horrible time is because it was poor and it was heavily bureaucratic. It wasn't that the people were horrible, but, you know, I really, really didn't like it. And yet, you know, I can compare. Things have gotten so much better there. And these problems that we're having, our self-invasion, our, you know, the self-humiliation. I went to a protest earlier this year in Washington. It was supposedly a right-wing protest, and everybody's invoking Martin Luther King and civil rights movement. It's humiliation, and you know that's not the Chinese who are brainwashing us.
Yeah, not to mention too. Speaking of that, and the Civil Rights Museum in Alabama and Montgomery or somewhere, they have a whole section there. This is what I heard from someone. They have a whole section there dedicated to the student insurrectionists in Tiananmen Square on June 4th, 1989. You know, those student insurrectionists that were trying to overthrow the nation. And there's a section of the Alabama Civil Rights Museum dedicated to them.
Yeah. Well, we will be having a show on that in a few weeks, couple of weeks when it is timely. And I will say one thing. You can be sympathetic with people even if, in the big picture, you decide that they were on the wrong side.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say, though, next time, if you do go to China next time, I guarantee you, not only will you like it, you'll love it.
I can't wait. But that's all the time we have for today.
Mm-hmm. It's been another good week, another good show, and I'll make it another week.
Thank you very much, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Beagle Radio.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.